I noticed you don't have ad block on these spoilers that you printed out.
Shut up, Aaron. All right, welcome to another Sevenland Hand Extra.
Yay!
Brought to you by Good Game St. James. Today we have more spoilers than a Huggies Nappies focus group. And like that first Christmas where Grandad ate too many sprouts, we have a comprehensive introduction to drafting. All of this, plus flavor text, MTG card quiz, listener feedback, and maybe that kid Travis might pop by with a new card design.
Oh, I'm very excited about that. Yeah. The last one went very well.
He's in Sevenland Hand R&D right now, busting one of those cards
out.
Yeah,
he's so deep in the pit.
Yeah,
of,
it's not child labor.
No, it's not at all.
It's not at all.
We pay him.
Yeah. So no one's here in the room. It's just me at the moment. But I'm joined by my usual co-host, as always, the inspired Aaron Graham.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Ah, yeah. And here is the guest expert, the tributed.
Our tribute. Yeah, like in the Hunger Games.
This is not a tribute.
that always ends well. I can't wait.
You might win the Hunger Games, Nathan.
I didn't do the phonetic.
It was my plan.
I didn't do the phonetic breakdown of your surname. Oh, I have a Nathan Kernow?
Kernow.
No, just Kernow. Pretend the W's not there.
Kernow.
Yeah, correct.
So, Aaron, what are we doing today?
Today we're going to go over some current news in the MTG world. And
it's
then we're going to...
Yeah, times.
It is. We've got a brand new set coming out in less than a month. We've got pre-releases filling up by the day. Brand new spoilers coming out every weekday. And we've got a lot this week. Almost all the mythics have been spoiled for Born of the Gods. And also we're going to talk a little bit about drafting today. An introduction to drafting. Which is going to be quite exciting. It's my favorite way to play.
Cool.
Magic.
How do we know that all of the mythic rares have been spoiled?
What they do is when a new set comes out, they release. Well, there's a set skeleton that they go off, and so they have a certain amount of commons, certain amount of uncommons, rares, and mythics. So a small set, you generally know there's going to be 16 mythics, I think, something like
that. Yeah, Wizards, when they announce the sets, they give you a little breakdown that gives you at least the basic structure of the set and. You can use that information to start working out how many of the mythics you've actually seen, how many commons to expect.
One time I was following the spoilers really intently, and all of the cards have been spoiled. 248 of 249 cards from the core set, all been spoiled apart from one blue mythic. And everyone's like, oh my God,
this is it. Jace is
this
coming back.
This is it. No, Jace had already been spoiled. Oh. All the Planeswalkers, it was a new blue mythic.
Yeah.
Or so we thought. And they're like, oh, sorry, guys, we forgot to tell you. It was just time reversal. And we were all like, oh, God.
It was bittersweet.
It was terrible. Yeah, what was the first card they previewed?
It was the first card that they actually previewed would have been at Christmas when they released Kiora.
Oh, Kiora, which is the big splashy only Planeswalker in the set, which is
is it? We know.
Yeah.
It's the they have a tendency to release five Planeswalkers across a block, and generally people like Mark Rosewater are pretty forthcoming with how many Planeswalkers you can expect. Small sets typically get one.
Yeah.
So we're expecting one more towards the end of the block. And there was...
Super Into the Future spoilers. It looks like it's going to be Ajani.
Mm.
Have you seen the image of Ajani and Elspeth just fighting Xenagos in the sky?
Three.
It's busy. Very exciting.
As long as it's Raven's Swan, I'm excited.
The other thing that popped up online the other day about the Planeswalkers, and I think it came from talking to Rosewater as well, was that creative determines sort of the colours of the central Planeswalkers.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And then they generally have one or two Planeswalkers that they create to fill things like a colour need and those sort of things across the block.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so...
Okay, so break down the new spoilers. We're going to go by the themes of mechanics, the new mechanics that they've got in there. So the first one that we were going to look at was Tribute. And me, who's not a good card appraiser, I was instantly very excited by, and I'm going to go for it, so I'm prepared to take the flak if I'm wrong.
Here we go.
I'm excited by Flame Wreathed Phoenix because...
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
so I'm okay with that.
You got four for a 3/3.
It's good.
Two uncolored, two red for a 3/3 with flying, so it's got evasion. It's a mythic rare.
Mm-hmm.
But then you've got this tribute two, which asks, I'll read it out because people might not be used to it yet. As this creature enters the battlefield, an opponent of your choice may place 2+1/+1 counters on it, which is a general tribute mechanic, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah, so
it tribute
has,
two,
yeah,
the number.
Tribute followed by
a number.
A number.
Yeah, so that asks your opponent to put that many counters on it, unless something will happen. When Flame Wreathed Phoenix enters the battlefield, if tribute wasn't played, it gains haste, and when this creature dies, return it to its owner's hand.
Yeah, so really now, it's like a split card. Your opponent gets the choice of which half of the split card you play, but both of them are pretty bad. Yeah. One is either it comes as a 3/3 and starts hitting them immediately, or you've got a 5/5 with flying that they have to deal with in subsequent turns.
Tribute calls back to things like Breaking Point and Browbeat which were quite a few blocks ago now, mm-hmm. and you might have seen them in the Sorin versus Tybalt Jewel deck as well.
Yeah. Have you seen Browbeat, David? Mm-mm. Browbeat's two and a red sorcery. Any player may have Browbeat deal 5 damage to her. If not, target player draws 3 cards. So it's they're put in this really awkward position where they have to choose whichever is best for them. And then you're playing it in a deck where you're either burning them to the face or you would like more cards to then throw at their face. And so this just does either. But the thing
and in
they
construction,
get
they might just get another Browbeat.
Yeah, well, yeah. You'll get.
One of the interesting things about this sort of punisher mechanic, if you like, because that's what they call it, is that it can make evaluating these cards really, really hard for mm-hmm. constructed and limited.
Right.
It looks pretty flashy when you look at it. You go, oh, I can have a 5/5 flying for 4 mana, or I can have a 3/3 hasty phoenix mm-hmm. that comes back from the graveyard. I remember particularly when like Vexing Devil came out, which was a 1-mana red 4/3, I think its creature type is, mm-hmm. and it's a 4/3, or it deals 4 damage to your opponent.
And you sacrifice it, yeah. So, but
they get the choice, and that's where it can potentially be quite troublesome.
It's a haste and it coming back from your hand, because it's not like, they're going to play it and then it might just be there for a round and you can have a look at getting rid of it. It's like, well, I've got to make the same decision again when I see it next time, and if I let it have haste, it's going to be in my face immediately.
That is actually something that I quite appreciate about this particular tribute card.
But it makes me think that you never don't pay the tribute, because you're either going to get hit buy it this time for 3, and then next time for 3 if you don't have a removal spell. But if you have a removal spell, it's going to go back in the hand, and you get the choice again. So just if you just think of it as always just a 4-mana 5/5, it's not that great.
Because if it's
great.
A sort of removal where it's just any creature,
let's say Doomblade.
Yeah.
With these Punisher cards, one of the ways you have to really sort of think about them is, What is the worst mode of this card? What is the worst version of this card? And would I be okay playing it? Mm-hmm. Because when your opponent gets a choice, they are going to choose what is best for them. And that's where a lot of the debate about how strong these cards are actually comes from.
Because a lot of players don't like putting the choice into your opponent's hands as well.
Yeah, so with the tribute cards, when you're evaluating them, you have to... the effects are pretty specky. And they look like, oh, wow, look, I'm getting a 5/5 flyer, or I'm getting a 5/5 with haste that will come back when it dies. A 3/3 with haste that comes back when it dies. Mm-hmm. You have to sort of think, if you're playing someone with, you were saying before, Doomblade, they're going to choose like the 5/5,
kill it, untap, kill it.
And it's gone forever.
It's just gone,
That doesn't necessarily mean that tribute cards are going to be bad per se, but...
You still have to have that removal in your hand, and that's going to remove any creature card
that
you've got.
And it just means you need to take that into account when you're evaluating whether they're something that you want in your deck.
Which, a thing that maybe we should talk about gods next, so that we can kind of tie this one in. If you have something that benefits you from just getting the 5/5, where it actually makes the decision so much worse, even if they do have a Doomblade, so you've got a way to give it haste as a 5/5 with flying. One of the other spoilers which has come out this week is Xenagos, God of Revels. He's one of the god cards from this set. He's indestructible, much like all the other gods from original Theros. If you're, he's 3 red green for a 6/5 that doesn't become a creature until your devotion to red and green is 7. And then he has another ability, because he's an enchantment creature. At the beginning of combat on your turn, another target creature you control gains haste and plus X, where X is that creature's power until end of turn. So chaining something like Xenagos into that phoenix makes it a horrendous decision for them, even if they have the removal spell, because you play it as a 5/5, and you're like, yeah, cool, I'll give this +5/+5 and haste till end of turn. And so they've got to make these decisions where it actually pushes it away.
And what could potentially be relevant as well, Flame Wraithed Phoenix has 2 red in its mana cost. Mm-hmm. It can potentially turn your Xenagos on at the same time.
It's crazy. So,
I mean, it's kind of difficult to evaluate some of these cards just yet. We tend to base them on what we already sort of know and past experience. But then some of them may come out from sort of left field.
You got to take a stab at anything. There's no point, you know, like we can sit at home going, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. So, you know, people will listen to this and hear us make fools of ourselves by saying, yeah, I'm right behind the Phoenix.
Yeah.
And then when it's like a 3-cent card by the end of the month.
I think the other thing too is...
What, those guys stupid.
The other thing too is to sort of trust that, yes, there have been some occasional big slip-ups from Wizards in terms of balance and power of cards.
Yeah.
But you also have to trust that they've tested this and that there is a reason that it's sitting as a mythic and that it's got the modes that it has.
Because the god thing seems to have failed so far, because there's only one god,
and that's the one that looks like it was pushed, because they all cost 4 mana, the original ones, this is.
Yeah, the ones Heliod and Ilk.
Thassa was the only one that was 3 mana, the only one that had a really relevant ability at the beginning of the upkeep, Scry one. And then the other ability is also really good, and it's a 5/5, and it can make itself unblockable. It's just like they pushed all these things in development to make sure that it was the best one, and now it's just too good and all the others are just not so great.
Is it because the other ones are poor, or is it just that comparison thing where it's not as good as...
If you ever played with the Titans in Standard, they fluctuated which one was best depending on which other ones people were playing. I remember everyone's like, Frost Titan sucks. That card is terrible. Yeah. Why would you ever play Frost Titan?
Then Frost Titan got good.
And then I played Frost Titan to tap down other people's Titans because it was best at just locking them down without killing them. And it was great. And then Frost Titan went at $20 and then all the other ones went to $5. So they're just going to be
in flux. Everyone's opinions on Frost Titan changed as soon as you'd played it.
It was me. Yeah, it was worldwide. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're so influential.
I played Frost Titan at FNM.
Yeah.
And the word
definitely got out.
In Seattle.
Twitter started playing it.
Yeah.
Twitter exploded.
Yeah. Twitter literally
exploded. Aaron Graham went viral.
Yeah.
Wow.
Aaron Graham's Frost Titans take down one more FNM. Yeah.
I can't wait till that happens this Friday and we can see what happens. So is it Afara we're looking at?
Afara. So if you haven't seen Afara, she's 2 and then white and blue. Again, like all the gods, indestructible. Devotion to her 2 colours must be 7. If it's less than it, she's not a creature. And she has an ability that reads, at the beginning of your upkeep, if you had another creature...
At the beginning of each upkeep.
Good point.
Very important.
If you had another creature enter the battlefield under your control last turn... draw a card.
Oh, I love draw a card. It's one of my favourite things.
And she's a 6/5.
I've really come to appreciate the drawing the card thing.
It's just so...
I'd never played blue at all, and then I played a blue deck, and I was like getting cards and drawing cards. And I was like, hang on a minute, this is brilliant. And they're
just like running out of resources, and like everything they look at from the top of the deck, they're like, and you're just like, oh, draw 3.
So it's like on Thursday's draft, I was doing Read the Bones.
And in Theros, there's not that much raw card advantage, which is just where you're just literally just drawing more cards than them. That's how you win games of Magic, really.
And Read the Bones, you're looking at like 4 cards. Yeah, you look at these cycles, you're going through them.
Look at the top 2, they're not so good, you just like got rid of bad cards and drew.
And you didn't mill yourself
even,
either. Yeah,
exactly. Look, even in M14, you'd play Divination, no worries, in your blue deck, because it reads draw 2 cards.
I don't think there was anything more fun than playing Opportunity in M14. It was just draw 4, you're just like, oh, just grab a handful from the top of your deck and just reaper. You're like, yes.
I suppose just from a less experienced player's point of view, it's with the gods, the thing that really did my head in, which might be worth going over for new people, newer players, is that it's not a creature. Because when you first read that, and you're not 100, you know, you're not quick through the cards thinking wise, you go, what does that mean? So it might be worth just spending a minute just to say, why can't you be a creature? And what
does that bring? Way that abilities on creatures work is that their abilities are only relevant when they're in play, unless it's a very, very specific corner case, like this can be cast from your library. But there's nothing really like that in standard.
I think there's a mythic in Born of the Gods that has one of those corner cases as well.
Which
the
one's,
champion
which
one's of Stray Souls, the black dude.
Oh, he can. Oh, because you can activate him from your graveyard, yeah. So unless they have specific abilities that say this can be do something from your library or do something when it's in your graveyard, it's as if they don't have abilities. So when you look at Ifara, one of her abilities is that she isn't a creature if your devotion is that less. But that doesn't count when she's in your hand. Doesn't count when it's in your library. So if someone goes, discard a creature card, say, in your hand it's a creature always. The only time it's not a creature is when it's in play, like on the battlefield, and your devotion is less than 7.
Yeah. Yep. And it's probably worth noting at this point, too, that each of the gods in Born of the Gods actually count for 2 of that devotion.
Yeah, so the original gods had, your devotion had to be 5, and they counted for 1 of their own, which is weird, because that kind of means they're worshipping themselves. Yeah. But also, Ifara adds 2, so that means their devotion goes up to 7. Oh, sorry. Their devotion cap has to be 7, but really it's only 5.
Because they're bringing 2 with
them. They bring 2 by themselves.
So my thing originally was, you know, so you sort of think, all right, it's a 4 drop and it's a 6-5. Awesome. But it's the 6. You don't get to do anything with
a
6-5.
Very, very rarely going to be attacking
straight away or
even
blocking
on,
as well. Isn't
or blocking
it?
At all. Yeah.
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 Until you've reached that devotion level.
Something very interesting that came up that they very quickly addressed was the hybrid mana, say on Night Vale Spectre and Boros Reckoner. So Night Vale Spectre is blue slash black.
That's 4.
Blue slash black.
Yeah, because if you have Thassa and Erebos both on your battlefield, when you are counting devotion for Erebos, if I'm correct, you count 3 black from your Night Vale Spectre. And so Erebos is at 4, and you count 4 Thassa, and you go, well, I've got 1 on Thassa and then 3 on my Night Vale, so Thassa's at 4.
So people thought the blue-black god, his name? Phoenix, hasn't been spoiled yet, but people thought whatever Phoenix is, if your devotion has to be 7, Night Vale Spectre turns it on by itself because you count the blues and the blacks, but you only count
one disc.
Yeah, like one is a blue and or a black.
Yeah.
Or blue or a black
at the same time.
Yeah. So they're only going to add 3, but I thought that would have been crazy because a blue black one would be turned on by one creature. That's ridiculous.
So you're saying if you've got one god that requires like 3 blues, or if you add 3 blues, that can work. But if you've got another god at the same time that has requires 3 blacks, that can be played as well.
Yeah, they're both active from that one. Which is kind of a little bit weird, but also if you think about them just as, and like this is a blue or a black depending on what you want, it can't count for both. Like that would just,
it reminds me of how I'd be like in a world war or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like
of course
as one army walks
you'll
over the hill, I'd be like,
black.
Yeah, I love you guys, yeah, I'm devoted to you, and then the other guys come and go, and you too,
and you guys as well. It depends on who was asking.
I just thought you'd be black and blue in a war, but. cheap shot, but I had to
get
it out.
So
I'm leaving.
Mogus.
He's a god.
Yeah, Mogus is a god.
What is going to say about Mogus?
I think the first thing that jumps out is that at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, he deals 2 damage to that player unless he or she sacrifices a creature.
Yeah, that's a Rakdos-y type.
Very much so. Yeah. And in combination with Desecration Demon, they have lots of opportunities to sacrifice their creatures. But the problem, again, with this one is that they get the choice. If they don't want to take 2 damage, they'll sacrifice a creature. If they don't want to sacrifice a creature, they'll just take the 2 damage. It's not giving them a good choice, but it's still giving them a choice, which is not great.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that he actually won't be good in a format like Standard. It's just what you choose to build around to put that pressure on. And I think the key with Mogus there is that he very much is a source of pressure for your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are running light on creatures or you can keep their creatures off the board, you are getting 2 damage through every upkeep.
There's some things that we'll talk about later which might help Black keep the board clear of creatures.
Right. Yeah, funny
oh
that.
My,
yeah.
Oh so my god.
We've got a Karametra as well. The
Karametra is god of very, harvest. Very, yeah. very unexciting. It's yeah. just like not yeah. splashy, not...
And yet you know, the art is, oh, is the really art. Impressive.
Fantastic, yeah. Sitting on a raccoon. She's got...
Is it a raccoon? It's a raccoon. Do they have raccoons in Theros?
Therosian raccoons.
Are you sure it's not like maybe a sable?
Yeah, oh, it's a yeah, could it's a, slayed, a sable. Slayed bronzed sable.
Yeah, she just killed it and is sitting on it now.
Yeah.
Wait. You don't show up to magic tournaments riding a sable?
Oh, yeah. How did you get here today?
Yeah, we have bays outside Good Games St. James yeah. for sables.
Sable bays.
Sable bays.
We call them.
Yeah, we just no, tarmacked over nice. The D yeah. bit. Yeah. So it just says sabled.
Sable
bays. But it's blue. So, yeah, and all of our sabled bays aren't blue, they're green white.
Yeah. Talking about Karametra, so like all of the gods, she again has the indestructible and the devotion clauses. She's a 6-7 when she is a creature.
That's pretty big, really. And oh, we didn't say that about Mogus. He has 7 power. So if you do turn on Mogus, he's massive. You're going to be dealing them a third of their life total in one foul
hit. In one sort of swing. And if they've sacrificed a creature to keep their life total above... Yeah. Perhaps lethal, it could be quite relevant.
Yeah, it's going to punch them in the nads.
But it's still a 7-5 with no trample, so you can still just throw a 1-1 soldier underneath the wheels. And
Which I always
gods
think
is going to fall
odd,
over.
Yeah, like, you know, one soldier can stop.
Well, it's very heroic, isn't it?
But then he just doesn't touch you.
But it is. It's very heroic. It sort of fits with the theme of Theros. How heroic this one little 1-1 soldier threw himself under the... Mogus, the, you know, god of violence.
And Elspeth is just a hero machine, so she can just make things to stop a god every turn, three of them.
She's very productive, that Elspeth.
Never got to the underwhelming part of Karametra's ability.
So she's a 6-7 for 5, yeah. Which...
Eventually.
Some of the argument is around sort of Karametra as well is that 5 mana is perhaps a little bit too slow to be sort of viable. And then you look at her ability that reflects that she's an enchantment. And it says, whenever you cast a creature spell, you may search your library for a forest or plains card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library.
So you have to, whenever you cast a creature spell, so you've got to be casting creature spells. Meanwhile, Mogus is doing his shit for free.
Yeah, for free, without doing anything.
And that casting a creature spell, you know, you'd just be sitting there, if you've got little spells and land in your hand, you're just like going, I'm just looking at Karametra, I can't get any value for it.
Karametra is really sort of setting you up to ramp into something and to thin your deck out, and there may be some advantage to thinning your deck.
But that's on turn 6. Threats, on turn 6 you're doing that. And the difference between Ephara and Karametra is so big. It coming down on turn 4, and then every time you play a creature, you draw a card. You don't want that card to be forests or plains. Like, if you could choose a card to draw, past turn 4, I don't want it to be forest or plains. And Karametra costs you more mana.
That is gonna win
you
the
need
game
to cast the creature spell. It doesn't... Because Ephara is like, if a creature came into the battlefield, you draw a card. Karametra's like, costs more mana, has slightly higher toughness, which doesn't matter because it's indestructible, and then you just get more forest and plains out of your deck.
So there's no bomb, plane, or forest cards?
No, you can get... When this forest enters the
battlefield, destroy target player. Yeah,
yeah. But you can get the Ravlands, to be fair. Like, yeah, you can get... Because it says forest or plains, you don't specifically have to go for a basic land. You can go for any of the relevant Ravlands, which... Yeah.
Ravlands?
Okay, Ravnica, Shocklands. Yeah. The Shocklands, which have the basic land types. So when they design magic cards, they create them for a wide variety of audiences. One of them being the casual player, one of them being the, you know, the commander player, one being the standard player, one being the combo player, like one being the limited player, whatever. Ephara looks like it was pushed to be good in both commander and maybe standard. Like, there are a lot of ways to trigger it. But Karametra doesn't look like it's going
to... I think Karametra was just designed to piss off the same people that they pissed off with Amara Tantris.
Amara Tantris.
Like, let's be honest. Yeah. Let's be honest. Green-white fans are probably rejoicing over Voice of Resurgent and Resurgence and its ridiculous price tag, and then weeping quietly into the rest of their collection when they get gods like Karametra.
Yeah. and Amara Tantris. People were saying Karametra's abilities would be 5 green-white, it would be a 5-7, indestructible, prevent all combat damage that would be dealt to creature tokens you control.
I think Karametra
could be quite relevant in Standard. Aren't tokens a thing at the moment?
Yeah.
I think Karametra could be good for Minecraft players because you can just go off into your own little world and just build world just, and get more land and
right. Just, say, just
ignore, ignore everyone else that you're playing with and just do your own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about Inspired because that one's quite interesting.
So, Inspired is a new mechanic. They didn't bring back Monstrosity in this set, which I thought was quite strange because Monstrosity is a good mechanic. I enjoy playing with it. They changed it to Tribute as the monster thing. They're bringing back Heroic and Devotion and Bestow. But we've got no Monstrosity, and it's been replaced with Inspired, which triggers when a creature untaps. So when it untaps in your untap step, the
or at any other time.
Or any other time.
Whenever it becomes untapped.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah, because there's an artifact that... is it untaps taps or taps?
No, taps a creature, but...
Yeah, Springleaf Drum was a really interesting one to have leak out early because you're kind of going, well, is it for ramping? Is it... What's it doing?
Especially when the Inspired stuff comes out, you start going...
And as soon as Inspired popped up, you kind of go, oh, okay. That... I can kind of see why that might be good and why it's also sitting at uncommon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, isn't it a one cost as well, isn't it? Something like that. And it's just a tap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one, and you got to tap an untap creature you control to add a mana to your mana pool.
So of any color.
Of any color, sorry.
Yeah. Those of you who are sick of playing Opaline Unicorn for 3 mana.
Oh, I played my fair share of Opaline Unicorns.
Now you can play Springleaf Drum.
Yay!
Or both.
Yeah, so Inspired is very interesting because it makes you look back over the past, over Theros, and go, what did they put in here that's going to trigger it? Because no one knew that Inspired was real. Savage Surge looks really good.
Yeah, Savage Surge just suddenly becomes kind of
crazy.
Relevant.
Triton Tactics. If Triton Tactics already didn't do enough, now it can double trigger Inspired. So Triton Tactics is up to 2 target creatures get +0/+3... untap those creatures. Any creatures blocked by them at the end of this combat don't untap during their controller's next untap step.
And it was already triggering Heroic.
And it triggered Heroic. And it cost 1 blue mana. 1 blue mana to do all those things. I've wrecked people with that card.
And I mean, the great thing is now that cards like Trident Tactics and Savage Surge can suddenly be doing some very interesting things that are going to change how games are going out. I mean, Theros is a very deep set, certainly from a draft perspective as well, but you can just imagine this actually really can shake things up quite a bit in the draft formats.
Yeah. So if we just look at a pretty simple one such as...
I just wanted to say, so the core thing to Inspired is just whenever this card becomes untapped, ...
Yeah.
That's pretty much it, isn't it?
Effect.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's whenever this becomes untapped, and the main way that you're going to make it tap so that it can untap in your untap step or what have you is by attacking with it. So they've put them all on creatures that have some sort of ability that helps them attack. Well, not always, but we'll see that in a second. Let's look at Ferris Band Raiders, which is green.
Yes.
It's 5 and a green for a 5/5.
Yeah.
Centaur Tribal warrior. Going off.
Yeah.
It's Inspired, which means whenever it becomes untapped, you may pay 2 and a green. If you do, put a 3/3 green Centaur Enchantment creature token onto the battlefield. So if you attack with this creature, it's a 5/5, it's pretty unlikely that it's going to die. In your next untap step, it'll trigger in your upkeep whenever it becomes untapped. So you're going to pay 2 and a green then before you even draw your card. So this is already giving you choices. Do I want to spend my mana on this or do I want to spend my mana on something else that turn?
Do I want to develop my board presence? Do I want to leave that opportunity and sort of deal with it later? I mean, even as it is, a 5/5 for 6 is fine.
Yeah. It sort of means that your opponent's always going to be guessing because any time you leave mana just lying around through their go, they're always looking at it going, oh, I could do this, but they've got that hanging around. Mm-hmm. And if it could just be for, inspiring your centaur, but, you don't know what's coming your way. Are there any centaur, you said centaur tribal, they don't really help each other, though.
You never know.
We'll see.
They might decide to stop pushing minotaurs so hard and start
just getting more of them. Yeah.
But I guess what is potentially relevant about a card like Ferris Band Raiders is it's not the only one. It's actually a cycle of 5.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. One in each colour. They all sit at uncommon, so you're going to see them reasonably regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are actually looking very, very good. And like some the kind of things good. That you would really want to have in your deck.
So what are the colors, cousins? And
yeah,
the black one?
Yeah. The black one is called Forlorn Sudama. Got it. It's a zombie. Yay!
It's in Magic Keys.
Yeah.
It's a zombie with Intimidate, and it's a 2-1, which isn't great stats for a 4-mana thing. I think, as Marshall says, it doesn't score very well on the vanilla test.
Yeah.
But when its Intimidate ability just means you're going to be able to attack with impunity. If they don't have a black creature, it's just going to attack and be able to untap at will. So you can pay 2 and a black when it becomes untapped. If you do, put a 2/2 black zombie into play.
Enchantment creature
token. Enchantment creature token, yeah.
The white one is, and the thing about this cycle is it's quite a sort of loose cycle. They're all different stats, mm-hmm. For the creatures. Like the God-Favored General is the white one. He's 1 and white and he's a 1/1. And you pay, when he untaps, you can pay 2 and white,
mm-hmm.
and you get 2 1/1 white soldier enchantment creature tokens instead. Mm. The red one looks pretty sweet as well. The
red one is
2/1 haste. So on turn 4, he will untap if you attack with him on turn 3 when you play him.
Yep.
And when he becomes untapped, you can pay 2 and red, and you get a 3/1 red elemental enchantment creature token with haste onto the battlefield.
Yeah. So on turn 4, you get the 2/1, the 3/1 that he makes, plus any other things that you can do.
I think my favourite, though, the blue one... It's good.
I love the blue one.
So the blue one, I think they're area depths.
Airy worshippers.
Yeah. There you go. And they've got giant spider stats, so they're a 2/4 for 3 and a blue.
Mm-hmm.
And when they untap, you can pay 2 and blue to get effectively a Windrake.
Yeah, which is already a good card by itself. I'd pay 2 and a blue to.
Well, there are times you will play Nimbus Naiad as
yeah.
a...
Mm?
2/2 flying.
Yeah. And when I first saw this card, I thought it was a 2/4 with flying, and I was like, this is the best limited card they've printed in a while. But no, it's just a 2/4. So you've got to like find funny ways to get attacks in with this guy so they don't block it with their 4/4 or something, bestow it with something so that you can start pumping those birds.
Relevantly for blue as well is Kiora's Follower, is a 2/2 merfolk. 1 blue, 1 green,
mm-hmm.
and it has a tap, untap target permanent, and that gives it quite a lot of scope, quite a lot of variability, but it also means you can be turning on these inspired creatures. Yeah.
I'm gonna get crushed by some person playing a turn 2 Kiora's Follower, and then somewhere on turn 4 they play Worshippers, and they just pay 3 mana, just make 2/2s, just literally whenever they want.
Birds.
I'm going to die to that.
So during the coffee chat during the week when I was looking over this, it seemed like, you know, you'd get your inspired cards that you were really happy with.
Mm-hmm.
You'd put out a Springleaf Drum and you'd just have them sitting out of danger, never attacking, never blocking, just tap, untap, 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 and getting all the effects for as long as you possibly can.
And I like that because they push these cards in ways that you've never thought about them before. When was the last time anyone thought about, man, I really want to tap this creature in some way that isn't attacking?
So, anything else in Inspired that we like?
Want
to make a mention of?
Oh my goodness, probably one of the biggest ones of the very early reveal was Painseer, which is... have you ever seen Dark
Confident? Yeah, this is one of the cards that's... it's on one of the pre-release special...
Yeah, it's actually Game Day card. Full art.
Yeah.
Looking quite sweet, actually.
It looks really good.
Now, hang on a minute. This is the card I read, and I thought, this is not good. I can't remember. Let me just go over it again.
This is going to be awesome. Powerful, yeah.
So, he's a 1 and a black for a human wizard. He's a 2/2. He's got Inspired. Whenever Painseer becomes untapped, reveal the top card of your library and put that card into your hand. You lose life equal to that card's converted mana cost. As soon as we read that, we thought, you're just going to kill yourself. You've got anything high-powered. This is just an easy way to lose the game.
Mm-hmm. That was like Dark Confident, or Bob, as he's affectionately known. When you look at him originally, you go, why would I want to do that if I cast something that... If I've got something really expensive, I'm stuffed. I'm going to lose life.
What you do is build your deck around cheap things. So you the top of your curve is going to be 3. Maybe you have some way to get that life back, say with Grey Merchant, or something.
Well, then you're paying five.
Then you're paying five, but and then you're getting some back at least.
Another example would be Farika's Cure, where you can gain two life back from blowing up one of their little creatures.
So what you're trying to do is just build your deck around it so that you can abuse its ability. And there are...
But the gain is then just so that you can reveal the top card of your library and put it into your hand.
So there's no other card in standard that just lets you draw an extra card every turn.
And that's the key. You're paying that life to get an extra card at the start of your turn. So you're seeing effectively twice as many cards. It's just costing you life
and
to do it.
And realistically, best case scenario, you're playing it in some deck. You play it on turn two. You attack with it because they don't have any blockers. You untap, reveal a swamp. They're like, oh, okay. You draw your card, it's a spell. You're like, yeah, okay, that's awesome. You don't lose any life to swamp. So you're just drawing cards for free.
Potentially relevant to this guy as well, because it's quite interesting. You wouldn't normally pay two for a 2-2 outside of limited if it's just a 2-2 for two. Mm-hmm. It is a human, and there are a few really nice, particularly black and white humans that could see it be relevant. A lot of them are cheap. Mm-hmm. As well, so that means that you're not losing much life and you're starting to see twice as many of your sort of creatures.
You have backup ramp for cards like this? Is that how you get cheap cards?
I'm thinking
ramp more
Zathra.
Not really ramp. So this card's not really going to go in a deck where, because imagine if you hit the thing that you're trying to ramp to, which is like a 7 or something.
Maybe I used the wrong term. I mean, you've got all of your, like, you know, you've got a 2-2 creature there. You bestow something upon it and make it stronger, or you do anything with a cheap spell just to make these tougher.
Is that what the plan?
Yeah, and relevant things, Gift of Orzhova is a way to sort of make your Painseer, for instance, suddenly a 3/3 flying
lifelink.
So
Gift of Orzhova is one white black,
attach evasion to it or something like that.
Gives it +1/+1 flying and lifelink.
Oh, so it's going to be some.
Other ones that could be relevant could be things along the lines of Cartel Aristocrat, which gives you a way out of your Painseer if you really don't want to. If you want to put the pressure on with attacking, but not necessarily take the damage from the life if it's critical. Zathra Necromancer as well, a 2 and a black 2/2 human. When the Necromancer or another human creature you control dies, you get a 2/2 black zombie, so it lets you keep some pressure up. The other one that's just popped out recently is Fellhide Spirit Binder.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
I like this guy.
Yeah, this guy's pretty sweet actually, and he's a Minotaur because, you know,
we have got pages here because I'm turning my pages like I'm trying to break into a safe. You guys are just like, hey!
We're just efficient. Yeah. We're just efficient.
The combination seems to be one of my clockwise, two anti-clockwise.
Yeah.
Everybody, Fellhide spell
Spirit binder. Fellhide book binder. Whenever Fellhide book binder becomes untapped, you may bind target book.
No, not
you may
apply.
Pay one and a red. If you do, put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of another target creature, except it's an enchantment in addition to its other types. Why? Okay, sure. It gains haste. Exile it at the beginning of the next end step. This one is crazy, and it's a 3/4 for 4. So you start making copies of their stuff and just hitting them in the face with it.
Oh, I don't have that one. Is that?
Yeah. Oh, I think it's fairly new. Yeah. It came up yesterday, I think.
Right. Yeah.
It's on there.
Yeah, sorry, everyone.
Yeah, no. I think it's very relevant in that you can copy their creatures. Mm-hmm. I know some people were getting quite excited at the prospect of doing some shenanigans with
Grey Merchant of Asphodel, Fanatic of Mogus. You can copy their
Kiki Jiki type shenanigans.
Oh yeah, true.
So there's lots of opportunities for this to potentially break out. Possibly one of the biggest issues, and it's an issue with Flamewreathed Phoenix as well, is that mana cost of 4. There are a lot of things in red that sit at 4 mana, particularly from a constructed perspective. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was excited to play Ogre Battle Driver, and then they keep making these better 4 mana things like Phoenix and this shit. So I can't play Battle Driver now.
What it does do is it breeds a little bit of sort of creativity, and it gives a diversity to threats, but it often means that
one's
eventually
be
they
found
settle
out
on
to be
one
better,
that
yeah.
is good, and that's the one that sticks around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's something to consider too, and to consider that red decks may find a way to actually abuse that, because it is quite a powerful effect.
Yeah, I'm copying a fanatic of Mogus. If you copy Flame Wreath Phoenix, hypothetically, if they were in the same deck, they'd have to choose the tribute on the thing that's just going to hit them that turn anyway. It's got haste regardless.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Fated Cycle. That's another mechanic.
We've talked about these a lot already. Jesus.
Have we? Have we already done Fated
Cycle? Well, we haven't in this talked about the Fated Cycle, but just so you get the idea
we'll
of this...
quickly over these ones.
Of this cycle.
Sounds like lyrics to a Bad In Excess song, because they all end in
Fated
shun.
Cycle? No, it sounds like a band that we should have.
Retribution.
Infatuation.
You got it.
Conflagration. I just think it's like a series of five albums by like terrible bands.
Yeah. By the band Fated Cycles albums.
Yeah, Retribution, Infatuation,
Conflagration,
Intervention,
and Secret.
Yeah.
The best of Fated Cycle.
This cycle all has a few things in common. The first being they all appear to be rare. The only one we haven't seen is the black one.
Mm-hmm.
They all have three of the coloured mana in their mana cost.
Mm-hmm.
And they all are instants with the clause, if it's your turn when you play this spell, scry two.
So that doesn't excite me very much.
No.
Coming in Born of the Gods, we have Drown in Sorrow, which is one black. All creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. And scry one.
Because
you needed slightly more than killing their entire board. You need to be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to keep this Desecration Demon on the top of my deck. Sure.
I love that artwork.
Yeah, the artwork is phenomenal. Yeah. It's just absolutely stunning.
It's
Noah Bradley.
Noah Bradley, yeah. He posts a lot on Reddit. He's awesome. He does a lot of sketches of his artwork as he's doing them as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's fantastic. I really like it.
Well, flavor text, which is coming up, but listen to this. The sad truth is that the Whip of Erebos is long enough to wrap around all our throats.
And that's from Parasophia, the philosopher, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's... bam. Whoa, that's pretty bad, Nathan.
Yeah.
I might have read the card a few times. it's heralding for Born of the Gods as well a bit of a trend, which is there are some really, really powerful uncommons coming in this set. And Drown in Sorrow is not the only one. Black also gets its hands on...
Oh, for fuck's sake. I'm so sick of black decks getting all
Blight.
Of the shit.
Okay, so Bile Blight is 2 black. It's an instant, and target creature and all creatures with the same name as that creature, for example, Packrat and Packrat's tokens, get take 3/3 till end of turn.
Yeah, so I wanted to play this sweet deck where I go Burning Tree Emissary, and they're like, nah. And they kill all of them for 2 black mana.
Or, you know, I've played Master of Waves, and I've got, because my devotion's high enough, 5
Elemental.
Tokens on the board. I will target one of your elementals.
Yep.
Bye-bye, all elementals.
A funny thing is, if I'm playing my Master of Waves Young Pyromancer deck, that's not a real deck, and I make elementals with both of them, oh my god, Bi-Black kills all of them as well, so you can get...
Interestingly enough, Drown in Sorrow would also have pretty much the same effect.
And it's target creature... with the target creature name, so it doesn't affect you either, unless you're playing those cards. But you know,
that is where it's relevant. For example, using it to take out someone's Night Vale Spectre because it's got, say, their Thassa online or getting their Black Devotion up might also take yours out at the same time.
So you're like, sweet, Barb, like your Night Vale Spectre. They're like, yeah, yours is dead too. And you're like, good. I planned that. I knew that.
But again, you can build around it. Just don't play Night Vale Spectre. I hear it's not very good anyway. No mainstream decks are actually running that.
I've noticed a trend with... it started with Maelstrom Pulse, and it then continued into Detention Sphere and now Bile Blight. They don't like people playing creatures with the same names. So I'm just going to play one of every creature in all my decks so I never get hit by Bile Blight or Detention Sphere.
Yeah. Other uncommons that actually look really exciting are Searing Blood.
Oh, man. Yeah, this one's
Searing
awesome.
Blood is 2 red mana, and is it an instant?
It's an instant.
It's an instant, and it deals 2 damage to target creature. And if that creature dies, it deals 3 damage to its controller. So you're potentially getting 5 damage for two red mana. But the one that really stands out is Unravel the Aether.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one and a green, same cost as Naturalize. Mm-hmm. Is it an instant?
I think it's an instant. I thought it was a sorcery, but it's even better than I thought it was.
It's a functional reprint of Deglamour.
Yeah.
And what it does is it lets you shuffle target enchantment or artifact back into its owner's library.
Yeah.
So, for example, I'm going to attack you with my Mogus, God of Slaughter, and you'll pay one and a green, and Mogus goes back into your library.
Yeah, so it gets around that indestructible clause by shuffling it deep into the recesses of your library.
And it also, particularly, it's going to give blue-green in particular a lot more tempo options. It's already, blue-green in draft already has a lot of access to some good bounce and those sort of things, but now they can also shuffle away your opponent's most problematic bestow creature, most problematic god, those sort of things. It's quite a powerful effect, and it's nice for commander players to get another copy of Deglamour as well.
Mm-hmm.
Have we got any other faves on the spoilers?
There's one you really want to talk about.
I really want to talk about. I might leave it till next time.
It's going to be a month. They're going to be out by then. So if you want to give it a month. Quick. Well, you know, yeah. It's...
Okay, no, I love Brim as King of Araskos because...
Brimazing.
King of Araskos, his one white mythic legendary creature cat soldier is a 3/4 with vigilance,
which is already, like, let's be fair, a 3/4 vigilance is not necessarily exciting, but at 3 mana with 3 two mana, white in it,
that excites me.
It's already looking pretty good.
Well, let me have a look at this guy.
And then he's got vigilance, so it's like, you're like, oh yeah, that's pretty good. Let's have a look at that. Whenever he attacks, put a 1/1 white cat soldier creature token with vigilance onto the battlefield attacking. Whoa. Oh, so he just makes guys by himself. And then
and he stays untapped, which is relevant for his second
ability, which is whenever he blocks, put a 1/1 white cat soldier creature token of vigilance onto the battlefield, also blocking that creature.
So he is Bromaz. He just brings his bros along and they just, hey, I'm attacking. Boop, here's someone else's attacking.
King of cat soldier tokens.
Well, like all cats, one cat and then the rest just follow.
Yeah.
There is actually science to prove that.
He's a fat cat.
He should be a sheep.
The rest are slightly skinnier cats.
Sheep soldier.
Sheep soldier.
But
one day.
Brimaz is really sweet. Like, as a mythic, he is already going to be one of those ones people I think are going to be sort of hunting out pretty quickly.
They're already $20 and sold out online. I was like, maybe I'll pick up some Brimaz for my white deck. Oh, no, they're $30 each on eBay. Yeah.
The closest sort of counterpart we've had to a Brimaz in a while was Hero of Bladehold.
Yeah, that was
way back in the day. The 3/4 that made soldiers and had battle cry, so they were sort of attacking for quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Terrible on defense, but unlike this one.
Yeah.
So he's 3/3/4, and even when he's attacking, he's always going to be having that extra. So he's 4/5 he's taking onto the battlefield when he's attacking. And when he's same thing, because he's got
practically the vigilance as a 4/5
so
as
well. If your opponent, for example, is choosing to block Brimaz, you might still get an extra point of damage through on a really average
attack. And the token gets to stick around, like, you know.
I think it's relevant to point out, certainly from a constructed sort of perspective, and he will make a splash in constructed,
definitely,
is that he competes with a lot of other spells at that cost, particularly sort of in white. So he may sort of push certain options out.
Well, people already stopped playing Loxodon Smiter in the green-white decks. The mono-white decks have got a lot of...
Slayer Paladin, Banisher Priest.
You've got a lot of ones and twos.
They've still got Voice of Resurgence. Don't feel too bad about it.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Voice of Resurgence.
poor green-white. It's all going to hell.
I don't think Voice of Resurgence would like this guy stepping on his toes, making extra tokens or anything.
Yeah. Last card I want to talk about very quickly is Raised by Wolves, which I think is awesome. It's a
three green
enchant creature. When Raised by Wolves enters the battlefield, put 2/2 green wolf creature tokens onto the battlefield, and the enchanted creature gets +1/+1 for each wolf you control. I think this is based on a Roman myth. It's Romulus and Remus,
Bit of an argument about that online. If you really have no life and you like to go and sort of bury yourself in the exact...
Aaron?
Origins.
Sorry. What did you find?
What?
No, I think Nathan was throwing you.
I was calling you out, bro.
This is when I studied Latin in England, I learned about Romulus and Remus, who were the twin boys that formed Rome after being raised by wolves. And there's like a famous statue in Rome of them suckling on a wolf's teats.
Lovely.
Which is pretty interesting. And that's what this card is. So flavor win for Wizards of the Coast. I also really like it for limited and stuff.
In limited, you're getting 6 extra power on the battlefield for 5 mana in a set that is basically built up to support casting enchantments. So you can you can expect to see a lot of it. And I wouldn't be surprised too if there's not a couple more wolves that just pop up throughout the set in sort of common slots in particular, because there'll be a lot of filler stuff.
Howl of the Night Pack from M14.
Or even, you know, like something like Timber Pack Wolf would be
sweet. M13, that's not in standard.
But
anymore.
It could be reprinted. And that would
gross. Yeah, that would be really gross.
Wolf Fear Silverheart.
They bring back allies, bring back Turn Timber Ranger.
Just make a wolf deck. They've been crying out for it for ages.
The wolves?
Flavor text.
Flavor text.
Yeah, right.
Do we get a cool graphic?
No, I haven't done that.
I'm disappointed. I feel cheated.
Should we still do it?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, all right, okay.
Oh, here it is.
Flavor text. Okay, here we try to I read out the flavor text from a card. 3 cards, in fact. Nathan and Aaron will write it down, and we'll go to Nathan first. Or we'll go to Aaron first for his answers, and Nathan just gets to nod and agree or whatever. But we'll see who can score the most.
Gosh, okay.
And it's all about making sure that Aaron isn't as knowledgeable.
Oh my goodness, I'm so excited!
Checking Aaron's knowledge.
Here we go.
Okay,
the
you ready?
I never said that I knew the flavor text of all the cards.
Yeah, he did. He said that as well. Okay, so I almost read out the name of the card then. But I reckon you'll go all right with these 3.
Okay. All right. Hit me.
You get it? The Somberwald is her domain, and she has yet to hear an acceptable excuse for trespassing. Okay. Thinking noises.
Got a guess.
Nathan's gone straight. I could see smoke coming off his post-it note there.
Could be really wrong.
Wrote it down so fast. And Aaron's got puzzled faces. So we'll just move along really quickly then.
I know the type of the
We'll go
card.
Straight on to card number 2 then, shall we, Aaron? Okay, this is number 2. Flavor text number 2. Let the knowledge of absolute law inspire you to live a life of absolute order. Okay, so...
Let the knowledge of absolute law...
Inspire you to live a life of absolute order.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
No. So people playing at home will get the answers to these in a minute.
I don't think they will.
Yeah, you've got...
Oh, my goodness.
Is this standard? You said this was standard or modern?
I didn't say anything.
Oh, my God.
This could be from Alpha, if they did it.
Just some quote from, like, William Tell.
One more time.
Let the knowledge of absolute law inspire you to live a life of absolute order. Yeah, at home, everyone's going... Why do they need to hear that again?
I knew it as soon as he said the first 3 words.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, let the...
I'm totally
Come
cool
on
that one.
All right.
I'm hoping that's...
Flavor text number 3. Here we go.
Number 3, okay.
Yes.
The Demir would hire her if only they knew where she lived. The Azorius would condemn her if only they knew her name. Ooh. Yeah, there you go. And she's...
She's
quite saucy too. She's she's on the about an 8 on the wolfometer, and it's all about the attitude in the picture.
All right, cool, I think I know it.
Sweet. Is that a bit of a hint?
Yeah. He gave it away.
Well, you both heard the clue. I was going for Babes What I Like in Magic, but then
Babes What I Do.
It fell through.
Like I'm taking such guesses here.
It fell through. Well, don't worry, Nathan, because you get to give your answer second. So if Aaron gives an answer and you go, that's what it is.
I can Google on my phone. I'll just conveniently excuse myself to step out.
Aaron breaks it down quite well, so we'll see how we go. With flavor text number 1. The Somberwald is her domain, and she has yet to hear an acceptable excuse for trespassing. What have you got there?
The Somberwald is the forest region of Innistrad.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge.
It's not Somberwald Sage, because it wouldn't be so obvious in its flavor text.
Don't tell us what it isn't.
Don't tell us. I'm telling you what it isn't. I remember this flavor text. I think it's from Dark Ascension. I think it's a spider. I think it's got Morbid. And I think it's like a 2/4, and it's like Morbid 2. It comes into play with two more counters on it, so it becomes a 4-6. But I don't remember what it's called. It's like...
Is that your answer?
Somberwold Recluse.
Spider. Right.
Well, I don't know.
Okay. Nathan, do you think that sounds legit?
It's a pretty good guess, because I was thinking Innistrad as well. Yeah. But the only one that came to mind for me was Somberwold Sage. And I just remember it because of the owl on her arm.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah.
That's what made me think
Yeah.
Vigilance, but I was...
What did you go with?
I put Somberwold Sage, but I was really guessing.
Right, there. And so Aaron's got nothing except for that rambling tirade of nonsense that he said, and you've got Somberwold Sage.
Kessig Recluse.
That's the spider one, isn't it?
That's the spider one.
It's not that.
Oh, dick.
Neither of you went with the babes what I thought were hot and magic.
Was it Somberwold Sage?
Somberwold Dryad.
The stupid forest walk thing.
Woof. That was cool. Look at that.
She's not fearsome. She's a tutu.
I didn't say fearsome. Yeah. I said hot.
Oh, no. Her flavor text is like, oh.
Oh, right.
Are you stepping on my domain? Yes, I am. Yeah. You're a tutu. You're stupid.
I
feel vindicated that I at least put Somberwold in the name.
Yeah, we'll give half a mark to Nathan, I think. So
boo.
It's zero,
boo,
Aaron, yes. Half Nathan.
Kessig replace that.
All right, here we go. Flavor text number two with the answers. Let the knowledge of absolute law inspire you to live a life of absolute order. What have you got? Aaron. Yeah.
Martial law.
Because it's got law in it.
Sure. And it's an Azorius card from Ravnica. Or, I don't know original Ravnica. It's probably a Return to Ravnica card I didn't play, so I don't care.
Oh, is that right? Yep.
See, I thought you might have been going a little bit tricky and had gone sort of old school and picked up something like maybe Disciple of Law or Voice
or
of Law.
Or something, yeah.
So that's what I had. I had Voice of Law, but I think I'm wrong.
I'm so happy right now because I've got a Thrag Tusk by you. It's Sphinx's Revelation.
No! Are you kidding me?
I should know that. That's disgraceful.
I didn't know that card had flavor text.
It's so sparse. It's like mostly flavor text.
I would quit, but I'm half a point up.
Yeah, oh my god! I have literally no idea that card had flavor text. I see draw X cards, gain X life, and stop reading. What the fuck? I literally never knew that. That's unbelievable.
Great, and that was one of the only cards I didn't get out of a booster pack in the whole of Return of Ravnica.
Mm. Oh no!
Yeah, I had to buy one for my collection.
That sucks.
All right, flavor text number three: the Dimir would hire her. I like this one, by the way. The Dimir would hire her if only they knew where she lived. The Azorius would condemn her if only they knew her name.
So this is a reference to one of the stories of the Return of Ravnica block, which was Murder Girl, which is a girl that went around Ravnica and she had a bunch of copycat killers.
Oh.
And I think that this is supposed to be Murder Girl in like card form. Is it Thrill Kill Assassin?
Thrill Kill Assassin. Right. What have you got there?
I had Stealer of Secrets because
Azorius
and Dimir both have blue.
So stupid. Yes.
1.5-0. Aaron, go stand in the naughty corner.
Again, literally, I never said I knew anything about flavor text.
And how much of a baby's Thrill Kill Assassin?
Oh, yeah. She is. She's totally. She's baby.
I don't know.
Yeah, she is.
Contact us on our Facebook page or tweet us if you're how hot stupid. Thrill Kill Assassin is.
Thrill Kill Assassin, very pretty.
Well, you can totally redeem yourself when we get to the card quiz.
Perhaps nominate your favourite babes from Magic and then get Aaron with their flavor text next time. he'll love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't the theme of that flavor text, babes, what you like in Magic? Isn't Sphinx's Revelation a giant weird...
Well, that's
weird,
why I
like,
said where it fell down, man.
It's a man.
I couldn't... that's where it fell down.
Yeah, the Supreme Judge is not a man.
Oh, whoops.
All right, so drafting. It's just going to be an introduction to drafting. Nothing going too deep. This is really good for new players that have been hooking up to the show and contacting us and asking us new player type things. We thought instead of just going deep with drafting on day one, we'll just do like a bit of an introduction, give people a bit of an overview of what to expect and how to prepare themselves for a draft.
Yeah. So drafting is a way to play Magic. I think we talk about limited quite willy-nilly, but limited is opposed to constructed in Magic. Limited play, which includes draft and sealed deck, is where you don't bring your own pre-constructed deck to the tournament. you build your deck on the day, whether that's from a pool of just six boosters, that's called sealed deck, or draft, which is where eight players, or sometimes less, sometimes more, get three booster packs each. The goal is to build a 40-card deck from the cards in those boosters, but you only pick one card from each card booster that you open. So what you're trying to do with draft is build your deck on the fly, change the strategy. So I'll explain how an eight-person draft works, which because that's the easiest. So eight people sit around a table. Eight people sit around a table.
Each of them's got three
booster packs of Magic the Gathering in their hands. Generally, they're the same booster packs. Everyone has the same combination of three, whatever it may be. At the moment,
we're doing Theros.
At the moment, it's three Theros.
Yeah.
And when Born of the Gods comes out, it's going to be one Born of the Gods and two Theros, in case you're listening after it's released. So what you're going to do, everyone's going to open their first booster pack, take out the token and basic land at the back, and then what you've got is 14 cards, one rare, three uncommons, and 10 commons, which is what booster packs are made of. And if there's a foil in there, you keep the foil in the pack because it replaces a common. Take one card out of this pack secretly. Don't show anyone what it is. Put it face down in front of you. Pass the rest of the pack to the person to your left. And then that's everyone's doing that simultaneously with the booster pack that they've opened. So what you're doing is picking the one in a vacuum. This is your first pick that you think is going to win you a game, whether it's by killing one of their creatures, whether it's by putting a creature that's going to kill them before they can react to it, one that's hard to block, so it's got flying. So generally, you want to be doing things that either kill your opponent or react to things that they're going to try kill you with.
Yeah.
And then as you go through, you're going to pick up the pack that the person to your right passes you and take one card out of that and so on until you've picked all 14 cards from that pack.
Once you've been through that first pack, you get a chance to actually review, have a look at what cards you have picked.
Yeah.
And then you'll move on to the second pack. And it repeats in a very similar way. You open the pack, take out the card you want, leave the token and the basic land aside, and then you pass the pack. But the difference is you'll pass it in the opposite direction. So it'll go to the right instead of the left. At the end of that pack, you'll now have
28 cards.
And then you'll get a chance to review, and then you'll open your third pack, and this time you pass back to the left, and you repeat the same process. What you have left at the end of those three packs of drafted cards is what you will build your deck around.
So you draft 42 cards, and something I did when I started playing was think that I had to use all of them, which was terrible. I think I played 28 lands and played a 70-card draft deck. It was in shards of Alara block, played five color-like angels or whatever, lost horribly, someone helped me rebuild my deck, and then I think I won the last round or something. But no, you...
So what is the breakdown of what... If you aim for a 40-card deck?
Yeah, so you... I recommend only ever playing 40 cards.
Yeah.
So you generally... From the 42 cards that you drafted, you take the 23 cards that you think are going to come together in with the most synergy. Some of the ones... Obviously, as the packs get to three or four cards left in the pack, they're all crap because no one wants them. They went around the table, or they tabled, as you call it. And you take the best 23 cards from those... Basic lands, you're allowed an unlimited amount of basic lands in your deck. Generally only use 17 or 18.
Yeah.
And then that's your 40-card deck. That's your draft deck.
You don't have to have the best cards or the newest cards or the most expensive because you're building it then and there to play other players.
Yeah.
And that's part of the appeal of it as well. It involves a bit of skill, but it also has an element of luck. And also it is supposed to be fun. Some of the stuff you can get away with doing... is very much fun and very enjoyable.
Yeah, it feels very creative to me as well because, like you said, you end up using cards that you might not normally use. Or, you know, like if you... I've never really played blue in a heavy way, but, you know, if I get an awesome blue card in the first draw, I'm thinking, right, now I have to really think quickly and start doing this. And you know what? I did that in a sealed format, and I played blue, and I had a great time because I was using these cards I would never have looked at before. And you end up winning or doing amazing things with cards which you thought would just... You just bin them straight away.
I think, too... Playing limited Magic does make you a better Magic player overall.
Definitely.
Because you have to actually think about... Like, anyone can play a normal 60-card deck that's been finely tuned, it's got all the right cards, you know what you're supposed to play when, but this actually requires you to be thinking on your feet. There are a lot more complex decisions, and it's not as predictable.
Yeah, so it's kind of like two separate games in one. One is the draft. If you draft a bad pool of cards, it's going to be a bad...
It can be hard to win games.
But then also you have to have your technical skill in the games, know what combat tricks there are, know what removal there is, know what is likely your opponent's going to be playing in the colors that they're playing.
Mm.
And you get that from drafting quite a bit, knowing how people play, and every set is different. That's why draft is so amazing. Every time a new set comes out, it changes draft completely.
People will do very surprising things with cards that you might misevaluate because they don't look good for, say, constructed. And so you suddenly end up seeing combinations of cards and ways to play cards that you might not have actually thought of.
What I like about drafting is I don't find it so intimidating in terms of you don't have to have, a $1,000 deck. You know, it's when you sit down and construct it, you're thinking, I could be sitting across the table with someone who's just sunk loads of time, loads of money into
this
deck.
Like foil shock land on turn one and then play a foil thought sees up and you're like, I'm going to concede.
Yeah, exactly.
Your two cards are worth more than my deck.
Yeah.
This you're starting at the same starting line. Yeah. You know, everybody's got the same three packs.
And that's the thing too. Like, it's really easy in limited formats like Sealed and like Draft to blame what you open and that you just got unlucky or someone else got really lucky. There is an element of that, but the beauty of Limited and why I play Limited as much as I do, apart from the fact that it's a great way to go through lots of packs and see cards without having to
just buy boxes,
just buy them and have all these ones that you'll never use, you actually do get to use them.
Yeah.
For me as well, it's one of those sort of things that I genuinely enjoy the opportunity to actually use things that I normally wouldn't actually see as good. And I also like the opportunity to play against really strong players who don't necessarily have the best deck, because you do learn a lot from playing strong players.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's a great way to sort of help newer players as well. As a more experienced player and someone who's drafted for a while, I actually do like playing against newer players and helping them with... Mm-hmm. Their drafting skills, because it rewards you long term as well when they get better at drafting, because it makes you better again.
Something very interesting about Limited as well is I don't mind losing as much in Limited as I do in Constructed. Constructed can feel really out of your hands. You keep an okay 7 cards in Constructed and they can go turn 1 1 drop, turn 2 2 drop, turn 3 a 2 drop and a 1 drop, and you're just like, I'm dead. I could have done literally nothing about that. That's not going to happen in Draft. In Draft, you lose to... on turn 20, you lose on turn 5, and it's constantly like, whoa.
When you're drafting, particularly when you draft for the first time, it can be really intimidating having these 14 cards and having to sort of pick from them. And what you learn, it doesn't really matter what sort of draft environment you're in.
Mm-hmm.
It's about learning to, I guess, evaluate cards and also to do things like read signals, and that stuff can get very advanced. But I guess what I'd sort of point out is more that when you're sort of picking cards, you need to think of specifically a nice rule of thumb is bread, right? Yeah. Which is bombs, removal, evasion, attack, defense, and that is, you know,
the D varies from acronym to acronym. Yeah. It's like dregs. It's just dregs, other stuff.
Yeah. Or, like, dumb stuff that, why is it even in the set? I hate it. Let me burn it now for you.
Or just disposable.
But so when we talk about that sort of stuff, and it's part of the stuff you might hear if you go to a draft with some more experienced players, a bomb is any rare that has, or any card even, that just has a big impact when it hits the board.
Yep.
Or when you cast it, it is likely to win a game. And bombs can be really obvious things like Storm Breath Dragon. If you open a Storm Breath Dragon, you're probably going to try and draft a red deck so that you can play a 4/4 flying
when you get
protection from white.
Pack 3 Storm Breath.
But
after you've been doing black green.
But it can be something as obvious as Storm Breath Dragon, as versatile as Bow of Nylea, or as unassuming as like Phalanx Leader. That card is an uncommon, but if it's drafted correctly, that deck is very scary. Red white, you play a low amount of lands.
Blue white and green white all have ways to really make a card like that very, very sort of powerful.
Well, the draft that I did the best in was a Return of Ravnica draft,
mm-hmm.
and I just, you know, no, everyone kept passing me stab wounds.
And
at the time, I'm thinking, great, I know that card, I know how to use it.
Yeah, so if collected you don't them. Know that card, by the way, Stab Wound is 2 and a black, it's an enchantment, target creature that you enchant with it gets take 2, and it deals 2 damage to the creature's controller during that controller's upkeep.
So I think I ended up with 3 of them, so there was always a way of getting rid of it, but then I had 2 more coming, and I just kept throwing them out there, and it was great having that power, so constantly doing them
and
damage.
I think that one's supposed to be balanced, because whatever creature, say you put on 3-3, the 1-1 that's left would be left to block your guys, and so they could stop taking the life, but my favorite thing to put it on was a 2-3, like the Unleash, Thrill Kill Assassin. They're like, Thrill Kill Assassin, I'm like, Stab Wound, it can't block. So they're just going to take 2 damage every turn.
Because as soon as you get something stabbed when you're just trying to get rid of it, you just kill it off.
I played the 2-3 flyer in that set because I love flyers in limited. Mm-hmm. They're hard to deal with. They're going to punch through damage, and they can block when they need to as well. So I play Sunspy Griffin, which is a 2-3, and someone would just stab wound it and then never attack, and I would die.
So you start with bombs. They're your big sort of splashy cards, the ones that help you win the games. Are removal, and removal in some sets is very powerful. It can be things like destroy target creature, and that can often be at common, and it can be quite cheap. And in some sets, it might be uncommon or rare or quite conditional.
Yeah. Well, it's like I got a Sip of Hemlock and the Lash of the Whip. Really expensive cards that you normally go, I'm never going to play that because it costs so much.
Well,
totally was playing it the other day in the draft.
Because you need to.
If you've played with things like Grasp of Darkness, which is 2 black to get the same effect as Lash of the Whip, you feel like you're being ripped off to play a card like that.
Yeah,
but it's invaluable. Any kind of removal in your hand, you know, you've got mana to spare and you've got a creature that's giving you hell and you've got that. You're like, I don't mind spending 5 just to get rid of it.
So, you need ways to interact with your opponent's threats. If you don't have some way to deal with their threats, be that destroying creatures, blowing up artifacts or enchantments, or even just sending something back to their hand for a turn, then you find it really hard to actually win games in draft, and that's why we sort of prioritize them and why you don't see a lot of those cards later in packs when you're drafting.
So evasion is just to give it a run.
Things like fly or intimidate or things that might be hard to block or are likely to get through for damage.
Yeah, because the way that you win most limited games is by attacking with creatures. You're not going to be milling them out or anything. Limited draft is a very creature combat-based thing, and generally you're doing stuff to support that. Whether it's by blocking their aggressive creatures and then sending over a big flyer to kill them with that they can't interact with, or just attacking with a lot of guys on the ground or bigger guys than they have. Evasion is going past the bombs and the removal. You want them to not be able to block the creatures that you're trying to kill them with, whether that's they have flying, intimidate. Trample is even an evasion ability because they can't throw guys under it because it's just going to deal them damage anyway, so they don't block it.
And one of those ones in Theros that doesn't always get sort of... It's kind of removal, it's kind of evasion, is like Wavecrash Trident. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look very exciting. It's a 1/4 for 3 mana, a horned turtle, as it's often known. But if you target it with a spell through sort of heroic, then you get to tap down one of their creatures and keep it tapped down during the next upkeep. And that has... I've often bestowed a Wavecrash Trident to then swing through and deal 3 or 4 damage with it by tapping down their big blocker.
Yeah, and removal can even be something like a Death Touch creature. Sedge Scorpion has
Death Touch is very
a very large amount of play in this set, but in other sets it's been...
That's what kept me going. I had a Sedge Scorpion and the bestow one, you know, the one
Bale for Eidolon, yeah.
Yeah, and they just sat there and they kept my opponent at bay for ages as I got myself
I've
organized.
I've held up 3 or 4 creatures with 1 scorpion because I just didn't want to lose any of their dudes to a stupid scorpion.
Yeah, I've won once.
In any sort of limited, you're only going to have a certain number of bombs, removal, and evasion creatures. So then you need things that you can sort of attack with. And they're your average creatures, your 2/1 tramples for 2, like Shadow Rambler, you know.
Your 3/3 for 3.
Yeah.
So what's the utility of those? Is that just to keep
pressure
on them?
Well, you need to have
so
a board presence. If you don't play anything until you play your bomb on turn 5 or 6 or 7, you've probably taken quite a lot of damage at that point. Mm. If they have an answer for your bomb,
yeah,
then you're probably in trouble.
So it's just something to keep them occupied, think about something else, burning through their cards and resources.
And it also helps put pressure on too. You can't run very well mostly creatureless decks in draft.
Yeah, there are a few formats where that is
quite possible.
Very possible. M14, I played a deck that only had six creatures in it because the rest of it was removal spells, bounce spells, and draw spells. But from set to set, when you play draft limited, it's very, very different. It feels different. The games go longer. The games go slower. Yeah. The creatures in general just have higher power and toughness. Mm. This one, Theros, can be quite swingy because of the lack of removal. They put less removal in the set to focus on creature combat, but that just means that you'll just get killed by some big flying thing, and you just have a lash of the whip, and it's a 5/5, and you're like, make it a 1/1 for a turn? I can't even kill it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought about. You know, you keep getting the attack creatures. You've got the three mana there. You've got your hero's downfall, and you're copping at the neck from this 2/2. You don't want to throw your hero's downfall because you're thinking, hang on, there's another creature coming. But as a person who's playing that 2/2 and throwing it across every time, you kind of want to draw them out, don't you? So they waste that card, and then you go, well, here's my bomb, now deal with that.
And then when we're dealing with sort of the D, whether it's dregs, whether it's defense, they're the kinds of things that you might play maybe one of them if you need that 23rd card.
Yeah.
But you really don't want to be playing like the 0/6 Guardians of Miletus. No. You don't want to have four copies, even if you know that it will sometimes block a big creature and that will let you live a bit longer. You kind of... it's not something you want to draft a lot of. There's probably two other things to just consider if you're starting drafting for the first time. One of them is to sort of... when you're building your deck, you need to look really carefully at what you're putting into your deck. Mm-hmm. Not just so that you have 40 cards, but you also need to think about how you are winning. So you might draft a really great bomb. How are you actually
facilitating
playing
that card?
Yeah, and okay, what's your deck trying to do?
So, yeah, let's say a Boron Overlord. Yep. Very, very powerful. It's a 6/6 flyer for 7. When it comes into play, you get a bunch of 1/1s with flying equal to your devotion to black.
Which is 2 bare minimum.
Which is at least 2 from him. If you have another creature, it could be 4 1/1s with flying. It's just going to take over the game. But you need to get to the point where you can play that on turn 7. Some decks will beat you on turn 4 or 5 if you don't do anything. So playing a stupid thing on turn 7 that's stuck in your hand isn't going to help you.
Yeah.
So you've got to draft or play your deck with that in mind. You're like, I'm going to draw my 7 drop, or I need to play the 7 drop to win the game. How am I going to do that? So you're going to play blockers, you're going to play removal spells.
And you just need to look at... I always, when I'm building my draft decks, after I generally have an idea of what I'm trying to do to support my deck. But when I actually am building the deck, there's often a few choices I have to make. Am I going to include this card or this card, which sort of helps my plan? And I actually lay out all my spells in order of casting cost that I might want to include, and all my creatures in order of casting cost, so I can sort of look at that. You know, what am I doing roughly turn 1, turn 2, turn 3, turn 4?
Yeah, that's
and
great advice.
So I've seen decks where you've got all these great spells, but they all cost 4 mana and there's nothing you can do.
And you just have to get rid of some because they're going to be stuck in your hand.
Yeah. And you've got maybe one creature you can play turn 1, nothing you can play turn 2, one creature that you can play turn 3, and then lots of things that cost 4, 5, 6, sort of 7.
And regardless...
Regardless by a deck that moves quickly and develops a board presence quickly.
So regardless of the power of the stuff in your hand, you need to be able to interact with your opponent in any way before turn 4. Because you can have the 4 best 4 drops in your hand and 3 land, but you can only play 1 a turn by then. And a deck that plays a bunch of things that cost 1 or 2 and then a 2 and a 1... If you play your 1/4 drop and they get rid of it, you're so far behind what they've done because they've played 5 spells to your 1.
Yeah. Yeah. And as an example too, I might have a really splashy like blue or green card and I might be playing a blue-green deck. When I'm building that deck, I'm looking at what am I doing to sort of get to that splashy card, and it might be sort of looking at, you know, have I got ways to speed up my playing it, like Voyaging Satyr, which will let me get a little bit of extra mana. Have I got things like, how am I going to get to the point where I can play that and win? And it might be, I've got some Wave Crash Tridents, but I've got no Heroic Enablers. So Wave Crash Trident is still a good card, but maybe it's not as good as it could have been if I had drafted 1 or 2 things like a Trident Tactics. And that's the sort of stuff you have to think about, which is why the laying it out is good. You can see what your deck is trying to do and what you actually want as a game plan. And then when you're trying to use removal, you might not want to use your only, like, your key piece of removal.
Yeah, you draw your key removal spell and they're hitting you with a 3-3 and you're like, on 14, you're going to take a few hits from the 3-3 because you might need to deal with some big flyer that, you're not going to be able to deal with any other way.
And that's quite an important part of sort of drafting, and it's where you learn as you go to sort of build. The other thing that I'd probably suggest if you're new to drafting in particular is just, and it's a little to do with things like etiquette, but also just being prepared for sort of drafting. And that is, it's often really good to just bring some slips for your cards just to sort of protect them if you want to trade them later, or if they...
Yeah, rare picks and everything. Yeah, nobody wants picks.
To... Oh, yeah, we'll talk about that one in a minute as well.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it's the little things, you know, shuffling your deck and then presenting it to your opponent so they can shuffle or cut. Having, like, dice or a pen and pad, which, I mean... It's
indispensable.
Good games,
it's in the store,
but you need to actually track your game state at all times. Yeah. And if you are questioned or if a judge is called, they need to be able to be aware of your game state. Things like counters, those sort of things.
Even in just a casual game, you can be.
It just gets confusing, and you don't want to seem like you're cheating and like ripping off your opponent. No, it's just like, just keep it fair.
You can. I mean, it's easy to screw up. Anyone screws up. If you've got a track of it on paper, it's like, yeah, I took 3 life last time, and I haven't got that recorded. So yeah, I am 3 life lower.
And I mean, the other part of etiquette is probably not communicating too much about your draft while you're drafting.
Yeah, a lot of people are very excited when they open God or a Planeswalker or a Hero's Downfall.
Because it is awesome.
It's so great.
I felt like an ass when I couldn't help it.
There are.
It's fine with your friends. If there's a group of 6 of you and you're like, yeah, Hero's Downfall, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted for my deck, that's fine. But if you're playing with a bunch of people you don't know, which is quite likely because you don't just randomly have 8 people together... Telling people what you're drafting means that the person to your left might not be doing that. Like, it's going to affect
that was a downer I had on one of the first drafts I did was, you know, it was the first draft. I didn't know what I was doing. And the guy next to me had his mate leaning in going, oh, I'd get this one. Don't worry about that. You should be doing this. It's like, come on, man. That makes me feel like I'm playing again. I don't know what I'm doing.
Also, while we're on this subject, don't be that person that's like, what's this doing in the pack? Does no one know how to draft? Does no one know how to draft? What are you, stupid? What are you, 3-year-olds?
I can't believe pick 5, pack 2 that
I get this rage blood shaman.
This insanely bomb rare has actually made it to me. I'm switching colours and doing it. For the other player's sake, keep that information to yourself.
And also shut up because you're the worst.
But if you do get a signal like that and a colour is open and you can start taking good quality cards in that colour, it is actually to your advantage not to let your opponents know that. It's also good not to tell your opponent your game strategy, like, I just drafted the most expensive card in the set. I'm totally drafting this deck now.
You're like, cool, I'm going to mainboard this Fade into Antiquity so I can exile your god that you were just like yelling about.
I got a pretty nice white rare as well. I'm guessing you probably got like an Elspeth or a Stormbreath Dragon. Yeah. Maybe I want to draft those colours and cut you off.
Magic card quiz, right? Because Aaron says that he knows everything about every card ever printed.
Not what I said.
He's exactly what he said. What do you reckon? That's what he said.
It sounds sounds pretty much on the money.
It's his words. I might not be verbatim, but it was essentially, I am the ruler of the universe.
I did say ruler of the universe, but that was...
And then there's a subsection in some sort of italic text.
I also know all the magic cards.
Well, like Hesic Recluse.
I could have gone a lot harder with this, because obviously Nathan knows his magic history, but what I've gone with is corsets.
Oh,
that's the theme.
Okay, all right. Yep.
Okay.
All right.
This could be interesting.
I'm interested.
Okay, so question number 1. M14. It saw the return of slivers. 14 of them, to be exact. 14.
That's not very many, actually.
Yeah. Only one of these slivers provided no boost or abilities to his fellow slivers. Who is the selfish sliver? That's a good word, isn't it? Oh, look at you two. Just boom, straight down. Next.
Yeah. We're nerds.
Oh, man.
Hyper magic nerds.
Who's
I wish that was a badge.
Do you like that
term,
though?
I wish you could get that on a badge.
Selfish sliver.
I'm a magic nerd.
All right, we've got no problems with question one.
Seven land hand first memorabilia will be hyper magic nerd.
You should give it to all your guests.
In a garish font.
A garish font. Can it be garish colours too?
Yeah, garish font, garish... It's Kristen ITC in orange on green.
I'll listen back to that. I understand it. All right, question number two. In M13. So we're going back. We're going backwards. M13. Mm-hmm. Next one's M12.
Okay.
M13. There was only one blue 3/3 creature card. Which card was it? So in M13, there was only one blue 3/3 creature card. Which card was it?
I got a story about this one.
Oh, you know it. Oh, yeah. Okay.
See,
I'll just scribble out the hint then. There's no need for the hint.
I need the freaking hint.
No, don't worry.
I just got to try and think.
It's
very vivid memories of that card.
Really?
Yeah. Extremely vivid.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll look forward to a story.
It sounds
then,
sexual
hey?
Now.
All right. Maybe I'll return to that, Nathan, if you're still stretched.
Yeah, remind me
of
the question later. Okay.
All right. Question later is going to be about 25 seconds from now. All right. Question number three. This is, since M10, there has only been one assassin in the core set. What is the name of this card? Since M10, there has only been one assassin in the core set. What is the name of this card?
Cool, yeah, I've got all three.
Yeah, my goodness.
Okay. Yep. See, and I'm struggling on this 3/3 blue. I'll know it too.
Have you got question number three? You happy with that?
I'm making a guess. I'm making an educated guess.
Yeah, I think
it's a good educated
guess.
Yeah,
it probably is because it's the only one. Yeah. So you want one more stab in M13. Yeah, one blue 3/3 creatures. Not a lot to it, so you're going to... That's your mid-range kind of blue card.
It was fantastic. It was so good in that draft format.
You don't know whether to believe him or not. It was like the biggest piece of crap card.
That, so it's a blue 3/3.
It's Sea Snid.
It is not Sea Snid. Sea Snids have awkward stats.
Right. Sea Snid. No, Sea Snid's a 3/3 for 5.
All right, so we go back to the top. Question number one. You two both wrote this down instantly. Yeah. So, you know, if you want to go like 3, 2, 1 and then do it in chorus.
Sure.
Who was a selfish sliver?
Can we go high or low?
I'll go low.
Okay.
Who was a selfish sliver in 3, 2, 1?
Sliver construct.
That's not bad. Yeah. That's bang on. Sliver construct. There he is for those
people. He's ugly as a sliver.
Yeah. Doing his best aliens.
That new sliver design was totally an upgrade.
I didn't mind it because I don't care about the old slivers, honestly.
No, I didn't even know about them.
Am I going to get burnt at the stake by the other hyper magic nerds?
Oh, I'll tell you what, let's come back to question two. It gives Nathan a few more seconds for the penny to drop. This is question three, everybody, mm-hmm. So don't get confused that this is answer number two. Since M10, there's only been one assassin in the core set. What is the name of this card?
Royal Assassin.
Yeah, Royal Assassin.
There he is. Look at this
old cherry. I'm going to probably hit myself when I work out what this 3/3 blue thing is.
Are you going to work it out? Or are you going to have it?
I don't know.
Handed
you said
to
you,
you
had
it.
A hint. But
okay, I'll give you the hint.
There.
The hint was just it's four colorless and a blue. So it's a cost 5 for a 3/3. It's got flash. It's got flying.
It's Fairy Invaders.
Fairy Invaders.
story about this card was I went to Las Vegas to play in the Grand Prix, the Modern Master Seal deck. And on the Friday, because it was the only Modern Master Seal deck that they would do, it was a very expensive, limited run.
Yeah.
On the Friday, they were running Grinders. If you win a 32-man event, go undefeated, 5-5-0, you get 3 buys. In the main event.
Wow.
And they didn't have a lot of product. I don't think anyone wanted to play Dragon's Maze. M14...
What?
No one wanted to play Dragon's Maze sealed because it's shit. So all the grinders... M14 was yet to come out.
Come to Seven Land Hand for the truth.
All the grinders were M13 sealed a year after M13 had come out.
Wow.
And I was like, I really liked M13.
I loved M13.
I'll play a sealed deck. Thought my pool was pretty good. It didn't really have many rares, but it was exactly the kind of deck I like to play. Blue-black control, like tempo kind of thing. And so all I'd do was counter their spells, kill their creatures, and then just flash in Fairy Invaders and kill them with a 3/3 with flying. And I won the final of the grinder by countering a thing, killing a thing, flashing in Fairy Invaders, and just putting Mark of the Vampire on.
Really?
So I had a 5/5 flying lifelink flash creature that I just pounded them with until they died, and I won 3 buys at the Grand Prix Las Vegas.
I've enjoyed Mark of the Vampire when it enchants 0/1 trading post goat tokens because nothing is a more deserved victory than a vampiric goat.
And here we are.
Travis.
Travis has come out of the R&D room.
What's going on, Travis? You've been released from the pit in Seattle come and guest on our podcast.
Wizards didn't need you for the 3.5 minutes this is going to take.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got a new card for us.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, well, what's...
And it's on some paper. Shrivel it.
Oh, yeah, he's got props as well. Okay, so last time he had
design notebook.
All that is left is dust.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It's in a lot of standard play since it was printed.
I've got it on this page right here.
Oh, really? Okay. Scorch Walker, also fantastic.
Scorch Lover,
my mistake.
Okay, what's today's card
Scorch
called?
Scorch Walker is actually a card.
Yeah. Whoops.
Okay. What's today's card called, Travis? Building up.
Toxic Hellhound.
Toxic Hellhound.
Flavor lines.
Yeah.
Is that would be
black,
you talk
red? Oh man, I'm not sure.
Red.
Here
toxic
we go.
Toxic Hellhound. Yeah, the Hellhound. Red.
Okay, Toxic Hellhound. What does it do? First, how much does it cost?
Yeah, how much does it cost? Don't jump ahead. You know.
It costs 2 anything and 2 mountain.
Four total mana cost for Toxic Hellhound.
2 red.
So that'd be 2 for the Toxic, 2 for the Hellhound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, toxic, one toxic. Red for the hell, 1 red for the hound.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And yeah, toxic that's is just... toxic can be good for anybody, yeah. So colorless.
Two.
Brilliant. Already sure. Loving this.
Love it.
Yeah.
It's a creature, a hellhound, 5/5.
Yeah, whoa, creature, hellhound.
That's 5/5.
Good stats. I like
so we've got a 4 for a 5/5.
No need. We had one of those earlier,
yeah,
actually.
Flame Wreath Phoenix.
Yeah, no need for any abilities then.
No.
We're happy. Walk
I'm
away.
I'm pretty happy.
Walk away. I'll have that.
Okay.
I'll play it.
Travis,
there's more. Hang on.
Tease it out. Tell us the rarity.
It's... I've never thought of that. Oh, okay. But I'll rate it a rare.
Okay, it's just a rare. Okay. Okay.
So there is no more text.
Ember Swallower kind of feel.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I haven't finished.
It's it's got more abilities.
I think it'd be I suspect this could be a really good tribal card where there's just a whole
hellhounds.
Squadron of hellhounds.
Yeah,
a collective noun for hellhound
squadron.
Yeah, but
here we go. Yeah. Ability number 1.
Really? Go abilities.
When toxic hellhound enters the battlefield,
it's a good start.
Yeah.
Exile any permanent your opponent controls.
Yep.
Oh, because they're toxic. Because
it's toxic.
Yeah.
So it's exiling them, it's just dissolving them into nothing.
Yeah, they just go loopy.
Exile targets
like
a drug.
And that makes land go as well.
Yeah, it's target permanent, so it can destroy their land.
Well, of course, it's toxic.
Because it's toxic.
So wherever that hellhound...
The hellhound puts fire to the land and it burns it all down.
Mm, yeah, so it just walks on the land and just destroys it.
Okay, tell us some more information. Can toxic hellhound be countered?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
so it's got some flaws.
That's okay. You've got to have a way.
Does it have any other abilities?
Death touch.
Oh, death touch. Yeah. Of course.
5/5 death touch. Yeah. Okay.
Understand. That's nice.
Cool.
I like it.
It's pretty strong.
Yeah. That's
really
good.
Actually.
That's awesome. Toxic Hellhound.
I'll
it's got
play
a theme
that in my
to
red deck.
It. That it just comes along and
it's
just
toxic.
Destroys anything.
Yeah. Destroys.
It's like a chemical plant that's been installed in a suburb.
Yeah.
And before long, all the kids are dead. Parents are dead. Mm-hmm. Houses have melted
the
into the ground.
The forest that they lived in has been exiled.
The earth, dead.
Does fit really nice with the fact that red often exiles creatures that it sort of manages to destroy.
Oh, you know, yeah.
There's been a few of those effects.
Yeah, Anger of the Gods style thing. This one just skips the middleman, just exiles it immediately.
So when are we going to see Toxic Hellhound come out? Is it going to be...
is it Born of the Gods?
Hang on, it's got one more ability.
Oh my God. Here we go.
Evaluating it all wrong.
Here we go.
Yeah, go on.
Well, I didn't have that much time to write it down, but I've got it in my head.
Right.
Sure.
That, I think I've forgotten it now.
So it wasn't in his head after all. We'll probably cut that bit.
It's not my head.
No, it's not. It's not in my head. Talking it up. Okay, I've got a memory I want to share with you all, but I don't know what it is. All right. Well, thanks, Travis.
Thank you very much.
That was
Travis.
Good words. We'll look forward to the artwork, and we'll see that online soon.
Probably. Oh, excellent.
I reckon that would go straight into...
Journey into Nyx?
Yeah,
give it a go. I'll chuck it in there.
Toxic river going down
into Amarka Rose water.
Fantastic. We'll have him on the line. Well, yeah. Travis will be in the boardroom with him probably, what, Tuesday?
Oh, in like half
Tuesday
an hour
you're flying
something.
Back?
Take the Concorde back to Seattle.
Yeah.
The
Concorde. No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, only for Wizards employees.
Welcome back.
My omnipotence.
If I just keep saying welcome back, I get to cut everything that was
said
before.
It'll get right.
All right, so just a bit of listener feedback. We've had the Facebook page, which we'll talk about in a second, is up and running, so you can get in touch with us, because we found out that no one in Australia knows how to use Twitter. But
no, I don't think it's not an Australian thing.
I know how to use Twitter. Yeah,
I know. Most people do, but no one
Everyone's using Jelly now anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Anyway, we asked about the new spoilers, and we said who was excited about what, and Dorian got back to us saying he was thrilled about...
Kiora.
He's probably a bit choking on his own vomit.
Hey,
probably
what's Kiora going on?
He said, the crashing wave. I'm a massive Simic fanboy, so I can't wait for the first GU Planeswalker. And I learned today that GU means green black.
Green blue.
So I didn't learn anything. I thought black because... Oh, but, no, I'm not going to give my reasoning behind
black,
it because everyone will get confused.
Black is B... But black and blue both share BL at the start.
Yeah.
And the first one that's different is U and A. But A already stands for artifacts. So U doesn't stand for anything. So blue is U.
Blue. Ah, right. That makes sense. Okay, I've locked that reasoning into my head.
I mean, look, to be fair, it is... Kiora's been a long time coming. She popped up in one of the earlier Jewels of the Planeswalkers, and they've been begging for a card, and there's been no green-blue
really
Planeswalker.
She had a really sweet deck.
I mean, and look, let's be honest... if you've looked at the spoilers, she's got a follower already, and now it seems two because Dorian's really
So Kiora's followers, Kiora's follower, unnamed Merfolk Man, and Dorian Johnson.
Merfolk.
Mm. Oh, should I have not said his last name?
No one's going to listen to that bit.
Oh,
okay. We've been going for so long, no one's listening to this entire bit. But do you think Kiora's the great wave of Kanagawa?
With the crashing wave.
I think she's kind of surfing on the great wave.
Yeah, it's quite a nice touch for the art, actually, the use of the great wave.
Hmm. Interesting.
And she's from Zendikar.
Yeah,
that I found really interesting.
The story says that, she's a merfolk from Zendikar, which has now been destroyed by the Eldrazi. A lot of people thought this card was fake when it was first spoiled because the artwork is so radically different to everything else in the set. But something they don't mind doing is having the Planeswalkers just exist in a space that doesn't have to be. Yeah, Tamiyo was a moon folk, and she was on Innistrad for some reason.
Yeah, there's some really old cards that I was going to look it up before, and it was an artist that they don't use anymore, but it had a real distinct, like, hard edge, like, dark edge to stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of sticks out. It was quite different. I meant to look him up, but I didn't.
Theros has got a lot of watercolored, like, the Eidolons all look very shimmery, but Kiora is just very, very vividly, stylized, very stylized, and a lot of Theros is quite realistic looking.
Right, and this is the other comment I like. Well, there was a few comments actually he had, but this one I like the best because I think he bigs us up, but he also slags us off. So, and I love that, you know. It's just
he's
the first guy that's done that, so we're going to give him something for it.
Yep.
So don't just like ride in being fanboys now because we're not doing the fanboy pricing anymore.
Now we're over that. We gave enough prizes away.
Hayden here, he's got it sewn up. Right, he's got the little compliment prize sewn up.
You guys are great, but you suck.
Best show. Can't think of anything good to say. Best show. Can't think of anything good to say. Right? So he's...
Oh, he just means he doesn't have a good phrase... A well-phrased constructive feedback.
Yeah, that's what he's got.
It's an interesting reading.
And best show. So that's it. I think best show, first full stop, would have been... You know, would have said it.
Can I read it?
I'll read it out to you.
Okay.
Best show. Can't think of anything good to say. Just don't drive and listen to it. You may crash.
From how bad it is?
No, from how good it is.
Like,
just the
like
best
Kiora,
show.
The crashing wave. It's a cheap shot.
You may, that's why maybe there's no full stop at the end of it because he was going to, you may crashing wave.
You may crashing. Best show.
Best show.
Best show. Can't think of anything. Good to say.
Good to say. It's good to say.
Yeah.
Just don't drive.
Don't drive.
Officers. No, but then Hayden got it sewn up there because then he responded with, can't wait for the next one and can't wait to come back and play. Oh, he almost felt like giving him a hug after that, but we'll give him a pack of sleeves instead.
Yeah. Really sorry to disappoint you as a guest, Hayden.
Hayden, come into the store, see Dave or Aaron. They'll suit you up with a pair of lovely sleeves.
It sounds like we're giving you condoms.
Have a 58 as well.
Yeah, or if you could see the face that Aaron's currently making.
Oh, they can't see it. I was pulling different faces for the audience to see.
In short, Hayden won something.
Yay! Woo!
Go, Hayden.
We got there in the end. What a debacle. So next week, which is always next fortnight because we're too lazy to come back and do this every week. Let's go back to the general gaming, and it's going to be on the theme of traitors.
Yeah.
So we've got games like, we're going to drag you through a good game of Panic Station. Awesome, Panic Station. You've taken Resistance Home.
No, that's Panic Room.
Oh, okay.
You got it confused.
You've had Resistance Home for a while.
Excellent.
Yeah. And is it is
can
Avalon,
I talk about Coup
is,
as well?
You can talk about whatever you like.
I'm
it's
talk
traitors.
About Coup.
We just had a new game in called Are You the Traitor? So we'll probably have a look at that.
We'll probably play Are You the Traitor in our Traitors
and,
Week.
And spoiler alert, folks, someone is going to betray someone else next week.
Whoa, no way.
Yeah.
Well, that's cue dramatic music.
It'll be the guest. It's always the guest.
It's always the guest.
You can't trust the guest, Aaron.
The guest in the library with a wrench. Yeah. Are we going to play Cluedo?
Or, you know,
no,
like
let's not play Cluedo.
Paris Hilton in the conservatory with the rhinoplasty. I think that's the update of Cluedo.
We have a Facebook page now, Aaron.
Yeah,
so.
Our Facebook page is at facebook.com/7. That's the number 7. 7 Land Hand.
Woohoo. That's really taking it out on a limb, isn't it?
Yeah.
Being all cryptic there. Please contact us on the Facebook page. You can still send us tweets. We read them all. Or look on the website and bang something under the show notes for this.
Or just bang something.
Just bang something.
Always responsible.
Throw up your hands in despair.
Or just throw up.
And the pod question for the week or fortnight would be, what is the 7 land hand you would keep? So have a bit of a think
Let's
about...
Let's keep it to standard, I think,
standard
this week.
Standard this time?
Standard.
All right, so in standard at the moment, which 7 land hands could you draw off the top of your deck and you go, boom.
I'm going to keep this.
I'm keeping that.
Yeah.
All right. And, it's over to Aaron in the sign-off over the outro.
I don't have anything prepared for the outro this week, so I'm going to very well read some of the spoilers from the set. Archer tip.
Also,
of
thanks
courage.
To Nathan.
I don't know what an archer
this is what
tip
Aaron
is.
Usually says or should say, but he never does.
Oh, is that
thanks,
what
thanks for Nathan for coming in and joining us.
It's my pleasure. It's been a short but wonderful experience.
No, thank you, Nathan.
Thank you.
And thanks.
No, thank you.
And thanks to me, David, as well, who hasn't had my name mentioned yet because Aaron always fucks the outro up.
Thanks to you, David. Okay, guys, thanks to Nathan and David for coming on the show.
Yeah, that's right back to you now with your glory hunting, seeking.
Thanks to Aaron.
Stuff.
Yeah. As well for being on the show. Champion of Stray Souls. Don't know what that is either. Tromocratus. I don't know what that is. That's not a word.
How to say
Tromocratus? A Shyok. A Shyok's Adept. That's a good one. Another archetype. I don't know what that is. Drunin Surau. Don't know what that is. Forlorn Sudama.
I think she was.
That's a weird word.
Sudamama.
And my favourite one, Searing Blood. I don't know what that is either. These card names are getting weirder and weirder.
Any snidey remark for after the music?
Sky raping.
That'll do it.